VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us today. And yes, folks, you'll get information you're not getting from other sources. Last week, a group of physicians went to our nation's capital to hold a press conference. They were addressing matters pertaining to COVID-19, speaking about treatment, prevention, and the risk associated with the virus. And despite their credentials and medical backgrounds, big tech decided to step in and shut them down. This after millions had seen who they were, what they had to say. And we do thank you for joining us today as we talk about what transpired with these doctors. We're going to address masking orders as we also address hydroxychloroquine, whether it's safe to reopen our economy, reopen schools. What do you think, folks? Joining us today, we welcome back Dr. Jean Orient. She is a medical doctor and executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. They're a nonpartisan professional association of physicians in all types of practices and specialties across the country, but are dedicated to the highest ethical standards of the Oath of Hippocrates and to preserve the sanctity of the patient-physician relationship and the practice of private medicine. Our guest obtained her undergraduate degrees in chemistry and mathematics from the University of Arizona in Tucson, her MD from Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. She completed an internal medicine residency at Parkland Memorial Hospital and University of Arizona affiliated hospitals, then became an instructor at the University of Arizona College of Medicine and a staff physician at the Tucson Veterans Administration Hospital. She's been in sole private practice since 1981. In addition to AAPS, she's currently president of the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. Dr. Orient, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Always great to talk to you.
Doctor, what was the message that these doctors were conveying in Washington, D.C.? What was so egregious about what was going on?
They were there saying that they are real doctors who are seeing real patients and that they are having success using hydroxychloroquine, especially with zinc and azithromycin.
What's interesting, according to Breitbart, there was a live stream of these doctors to this press conference, over 17 million views within 8 hours, 185,000 concurrent viewers at the same time it was streamed, and another 1 million viewers on Twitter's live streaming, all other additional platforms. Why was the message shut down last week and really continues to be shut down by social media?
This is the question of the century. Why should doctors telling about their experience and giving patients hope be shut down? Apparently, there are very powerful forces that want patients to be panic-stricken and fearful and don't care if they die needlessly. Otherwise, why would you want to shut these doctors down? Why not? If you have a contrary message, say, well, I don't think it works, or I have something better, why do you want to black out their message?
Yeah, matter of fact, your organization, AAPS, said that this sets a very dangerous precedent, harmful to all patients and physicians, regardless of your views on particular treatments or medications. Why do you see this as being so dangerous?
Well, it's unprecedented for some person in authority in the central government with all kinds of ties to a commercial interest, to non-governmental tax-exempt organizations, to international organizations, to vaccine manufacturers, to have this stranglehold on the flow of medical information. If they want to prevent patients from getting something their doctors think works, something that just happens to be cheap and long-established, and make them totally dependent on what the powers that be believe that they should be allowed to have.
Mm-hmm. Are there any medical qualifications of those in big tech who decided to shut them down? I mean, what is their qualification to say, no, your voice cannot be heard?
Well, I don't think that Zuckerberg or Bezos or any of those people who are in charge of what goes on their platforms has any medical credentials, but they're getting pressure or information from somebody who doesn't want the message to get out.
Yeah.
Don't care what their credentials are. They don't have the right to do this. Patients and physicians have the right to make their own decisions.
You're actually asking for people to take action on this issue across the nation. What course of action are you advocating?
I think first you need to get the message out that there is no need for all of this panic and concern if there is a successful treatment, which is what they're afraid of, and that we should be demanding that our doctors be allowed to find out all the information that's there and to advise us and not be forbidden to prescribe long-approved drugs according to the best of their judgment about what's best for us.
And so who can people contact in regard to this?
I think the governor, their legislators, their doctor, their medical associations affiliated with the AMA who seem to be in favor of squelching this information too, their congressman, anybody who's got a microphone or a pen that has access to listeners or readers.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that there's no need to panic over successful treatment. Are you implying that there are those who are actually not wanting successful treatment to take place?
Well, why else are they trying to keep doctors from being able to use it? If they actually don't want people to get well or to have their fears assuaged.
I'd like to talk about several of these aspects here, one of which is hydroxychloroquine. And there are many testimonials from a number of physicians who attest to its effectiveness. Some have said even their fatalities have been cut in half. Yet we see such an unwillingness to sanction its use by the FDA for COVID-19. Any clue of what's happening behind the scenes? Your comments on HCQ and its use.
Well, there are things happening behind the scenes. Like Commissioner Stephen Hine has said, decision should be between the physician and his patient. He said that on the Today Show, and that this drug has been approved for many, many years for various conditions, and we know that it's safe in those conditions. He didn't say we don't know it isn't safe or why it wouldn't be safe in other conditions, but there you have it. But the FDA has put out all types of negative statements about this, and state pharmacy boards or other state agencies have quoted them for saying this is dangerous and it doesn't work and we have to keep save patients from getting this this dangerous drug.
How can they say it doesn't work when we have so many physicians attesting to its effectiveness? And as I said, some have said that the fatality rates were decreased by 50%.
Well, the study at Henry Ford Health System showed that in hospitalized patients, those who got the hydroxychloroquine relatively early had half the fatalities. This was published in a peer-reviewed journal, but Dr. Fauci, who is America's doctor, the 79-year-old bureaucrat who's been in the swamp for decades, says the study is flawed. Well, I mean, who is he to tell doctors how they should interpret the study? And Henry Ford Health Systems has been gagged and silenced, along with those doctors who were at that that press conference.
Mm-hmm. Last Wednesday, and as you mentioned, they're using, means and quoting studies that are not accurate. I mean, we had the Ohio Department of Health announce that the Ohio Board of Pharmacy issued this ruling prohibiting the sale or dispensing of hydroxychloroquine and to treat COVID-19. Then we had Ohio's Governor DeWine last Thursday morning ask him to halt this new rule. I mean, you've said the words, this should be up to a patient and their doctor.
It should be, and it's that way for every other drug that is FDA approved, and at least one out of five or one out of three prescriptions is for an off-label use. That means one that's not gone through this extremely expensive approval process, but that doctors are using, without any consternation whatsoever. The pharmacist just fills the prescription.
How big an impact is Big Pharma having in all this?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. Or Big Pharma, or just specifically Gilead Science, which has this remdesivir drug that they've been trying to get into a use for some 30 years now. It didn't work for Ebola, but now the government has bought up 3 months of production that hasn't even occurred yet. Or the various vaccine manufacturers who want to have a vaccine that they'd really like everybody in the world to have to take.
Yeah, and I find it very interesting, the likes of Bill Gates bragging here not long ago when he was so involved in vaccines and so forth, talking about how he gets a 20-to-1 return on his investments in vaccinations like that. And I guess hydroxychloroquine wouldn't give that kind of return, would it?
Well, it's not going to give any return. It's a generic drug. It can be manufactured very, very cheaply. So, and I don't know whether Bill Gates would need more money. I think part of his thing is ideological zeal, that he wants to save the world, mm-hmm. vaccinate everybody, and thereby decrease its population by 10 to 15%.
Yeah, figure that one out. I mean, we're going to save the world, but we're going to decrease the population by doing so.
Right.
Do you believe then that this battle over HCQ is more of not so much a medical battle, but a political battle?
It's absolutely a political battle. We don't have medical battles like this. You know, doctors may argue with each other, and some will do it one way, and some will do it another way. But this is political, and I think a lot of it has to do with antagonism toward Trump. A lot of it has to do with these financial interests or other interests, ideological interests. Some people are clearly glad that the economy is crashing and that we're going to have a global reset and maybe get to a global socialist economy.
Hi, Dr. Jean Orient with us today, Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Orient, I find it very interesting, in light of the shutdown of talk about hydroxychloroquine, that yet we have the likes of Nancy Pelosi suggesting this next relief bill that is out there, are provisions in there for cannabis and for the allowing of banking of cannabis. And she was asked about this, and she said, she suggested that cannabis is a therapy that's proven successful. And I thought, where is the scrutiny on her comments like it is for doctors that are espousing hydroxychloroquine?
Look, cannabis has not been proven successful for anything. And it can't be because it's illegal and doctors, researchers can't get it to study.
Doctor, can you talk about the surge of positive tests for COVID-19? Why is this happening?
Well, the more tests you do, the more positives you're going to get. They've now redefined case. Instead of being a sick person, it's somebody who has a positive test. We know that at maybe 80% of the tests are false positive. We do know that some labs are saying that 100% of their tests are positive, that people are getting reports of positive tests even though they didn't have a test, that doctors are sending in unused swabs and getting a positive test. The president of Tanzania tested a fruit and a goat and a sheep, and the fruit and the goat were positive. We really don't know what these positive tests mean. There are, in some cases, some areas, like in Arizona, more patients in the ICU. The death rate has been steadily declining since in mid-June. And there's so much confusion even about how many people are dying of COVID versus those who are dying with COVID, like mm-hmm. the guy who was in a motorcycle crash was also positive for COVID.
And that was listed as cause of death. Folks, we're going to take a quick 60-second break. Dr. Jean Orient with us today, Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Their website, aapsonline.org, aapsonline.org. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where is the Garden of Eden today?
Chris, we don't know. The location of the Garden of Eden is forever lost. After Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, God placed an angel to guard the entrance so that no one could go there again. There is no such place on earth that's guarded by a fearsome angel. The Bible does tell us, however, that in the days of Noah, the world was totally restructured by that great flood. All landmarks of the previous world were destroyed. The earth was completely restructured by that flood, so we wouldn't expect to find the Garden of Eden. While the names of the rivers that are given in Genesis do correspond to modern-day river names, they don't actually correspond to any known rivers. Chris, let's go back to Genesis and think carefully about what it teaches there.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, doctors silenced. Silenced on their hope that they're giving to individuals regarding treatment for COVID-19. Silenced by social media. Silenced. You cannot let this message get out there. We're talking today with Dr. Jane Orient, a medical doctor. She's also executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, president of Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, and certainly talking about COVID-19 and what's going on. And you mentioned something just before the break, Dr. Orient, and mentioned 80% of tests were false positives. Could you comment further on that?
Well, I shouldn't say that all of the tests have a false positive rate of 80%. There are some reports that as many as 80% of the tests were false positive, these PCR tests.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're testing a low-risk population with any kind of a diagnostic test, it could be that the number of false positives will exceed the number of true positives in that population. It's kind of a complicated statistical argument that has to do with the prevalence of disease in the population. Anyway, there's a lot of doubt of what a positive test means, especially if you're testing a person who's at low risk.
So let's talk further about deaths and hospitalizations. You indicate, at least in your state, Arizona, that there's a downward trend. Across the nation as a whole, are we also witnessing that? Because there is absolute scare that is being implanted in the hearts of people all across this nation every time they turn on their news.
Well, there are more cases because, as I say, a case means a positive test, which could be in a person who is asymptomatic and is never going to get sick. As to the death rate, there's so much confusion about what the statistics mean because there's a financial incentive to diagnose more COVID-19. The only accurate measure, in my opinion, is looking at the all-cause mortality rate. And this went up around in June, came to a peak in all age groups, has gone down, and is now essentially at the baseline expected rate that, you know, a certain number of people die every day of something.
Mm-hmm.
And by one definition of the epidemic, this pandemic is over. There may still be a few cases here and there. There are people who are dying of it still. But the epidemic status is over because the death rate is back to baseline.
Last week, we just had the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Robert Redfield, acknowledge that the number of COVID-19 deaths could be inflated where someone who had the virus actually died from something else, but it was recorded as a COVID death. You said there's financial incentives that is going to hospitals that have this on their death certificates?
Well, or have it on their admission diagnosis, yeah, Medicare or Medicaid may pay by the diagnosis, and if it's COVID, you get more money. If you intubate a patient, supposedly for COVID, whether they need it or not, you get $39,000, no matter how long they're on the ventilator, at least some sources say. Yes, there is a financial incentive. The hospitals are really hurting because they were shut down and couldn't do elective procedures for a while, and they got to bring in money, and that's one way to do it.
So you believe the death rates even are inflated in themselves?
Yes.
Wow. We're also seeing, and again, every night, if you put on your ABC, CBS, NBC local news station, every night you're getting daily counts with this number of cases now in our state. We're seeing state after state now and community after community that are issuing these mandatory mask orders. How effective are the masks, doctor? Is there evidence-based information supporting them?
The evidence is really very poor. Now, in a medical setting, when you're dealing with infected patients, workers need to have effective protection. They need to have medical masks that work and probably also goggles. But if you're looking at people wearing cloth masks out in public, especially outdoors, especially if they're drenched with sweat and they've been accumulating their own secretions all day long, there is no evidence that that is helpful and plenty of reason to think that it's harmful.
Wow. I know there's a lot of variance on thoughts regarding masks, but I did see an article out. Sweden's top epidemiologist, Anders Tegnell, he said that there's no point to mandating masks in public, not even on public transport. Sweden never did have a full-scale lockdown as did other nations, and their death toll is significantly lower than other countries did.
Well, their death rate is coming back down to, from COVID, is coming back down to zero, as is happening everywhere in the world eventually, and it sure doesn't make a lot of sense to say, well, now that our death rate is coming down almost to zero in many places, now we're going to make you wear a mask, and then maybe we can take credit for it, even though the epidemic was over well before our masking could possibly have had an effect.
What about the term social distancing or physical distancing? Any evidence that's effective to show the stopping the spread of COVID-19?
Well, that's a theoretical thing, too. I mean, you can do measurements of how far your droplets go if you sneeze or cough or even if you breathe, but there's no evidence to show that if you keep everybody 2 arms length apart, that it's going to stop an epidemic. This has never been tried before. We don't have any experimental way of testing it. Actually, if you sneeze, maybe your droplets travel 26 feet. Or if they get in the aerosol and they're circulated by the HVAC system, it doesn't matter how far away you are. But it certainly has a devastating effect on your ability to conduct business, to have normal social interactions, to have children learning in school together, playing together, eating together, that sort of thing.
So let's get to the schools, because there's a debate taking place in every community, every state across this nation on schools reopening. And I'd like to get your thoughts on whether or not it's safe to do so if we're putting our nation's children at risk. I mean, we have the teachers' unions greatly involved. The Milwaukee Teachers' Union made fake tombstones protesting the reopening of school. Other teachers engaged in this National Day of Resistance this past weekend. I saw a picture with a fake tombstone on saying, "Here lies a third grade student from Green Bay who caught COVID at school." Your comments on school safety and this whole matter of fear that's being instilled through putting up these tombstones?
Well, I think maybe the children will die of fright or die of depression, loneliness, and so on. There really have been almost no children who have died of COVID. They probably have great difficulty catching it. If they catch it, they don't get very sick. And they don't transmit it well because they don't have the same number of receptors. So the whole idea of closing schools was absurd to start with. I mean, schools have never been closed except like in flu epidemics or something. If there's a measles outbreak, they might be closed for a couple of weeks, partly because the absenteeism is so high.
And that's localized.
And the school makes the decision about what to do. But to have this nationwide closure of schools for something that children don't get or don't die of, and don't transmit. But imagine the embarrassment of the government having to admit, we wrecked these children's school years and made it difficult on all their parents, and it was a big mistake. You think they're going to admit that?
Yeah, my. Well, and at the same time, I mean, we've got every school district right now talking about not being able to reopen or having virtual learning and the impact that this is going to have on students in that regard. So from what you observe, it's safe for schools to reopen. I mean, but what we'll hear, doctor, is, well, if this will save even one child, but we've got more children dying of the flu.
Well, we do. That's a terrible argument, because everything that we do costs lives as well by interfering with children becoming normally immune, with children having the normal interactions that they need. Look, if virtual online learning works, why are we paying all this money for school buildings and teachers to begin with?
Something to think about. And then also we've got governors who are shutting down their economy once again.
Well, I think that this is just, it's a disaster, and it will do far more harm than good. We don't have any evidence that lockdowns have worked anywhere in the world as far as changing the course of the disease, but we know for a fact they have done enormous amount of damage.
I'd like to get your thoughts on one other matter, and that is, I know your organization is concerned about emergency powers, the emergency powers by governors in particular. And, for instance, in our state of Wisconsin, we saw earlier this year our governor, Tony Evers, issue this emergency health declaration and shut down this state, shut down the economy, even in counties that didn't have a single case going on, shut them down, shut the businesses down. We got business closures taking place all across the state. His authority only lasted 60 days. He tried to extend it, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court shut him down when he was taken to court. And now his powers ran out in mid-May, but now in late July, and now that we have a new Supreme Court justice on the bench, he has now issued another health emergency for the very same so-called emergency, believing he's got another 60 days. Isn't this an abuse of power, not only from him, but from governors across this nation?
Oh, absolutely it is. And AAPS was warning about this emergency State Powers Act back in 2001 when there was this push to pass them, because it gives so much power to a small number of individuals with no checks and balances at all. And they can do suspend constitutional rights, they can destroy people's livelihoods, they can destroy their family life, they can just wreak all kinds of havoc, and there's no accountability whatsoever. Where does it stop? We have got to do something about those, about these acts.
And friends, you've seen what governors have done, shutting down church services across the nation while sanctioning protest in the streets, linking arm to arm with one another. It's okay if you protest, don't you just go to church and worship God? Don't you, you know, participate in these religious type activities? It's the sanction okay to go into an abortion clinic to kill the baby. You just cannot stand outside the abortion clinic to hold a sign saying this is wrong. Folks, it's unbelievable, these powers. We've seen governors who have said, no, you can't buy flower seeds in the spring planting season, shutting down certain aisles in the stores, forbidding boating and other activities. Some saying, was a governor of Michigan, you can boat on the water if it's a canoe or rowboat, but you can't have a motor behind the boat because that means you'd have to go to the gas station and get gas. Folks, it's outrageous, the things that have been going on. We're going to open our phone lines today. Our guest is Dr. Jean Orient, and our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. Maybe you've got concerns over issues. Maybe it's media hype that's going on. You want to know truth from fiction. Pick up your phone. Give us a call. 800-733-9829. But, Doctor, in my opinion, some of these governors have gone way, way overboard in their dictates that they have coming down from their offices.
They have. They should not have this power, because we see what people do with power when they have it, is they abuse it. And they can do untold amounts of harm and suffer no consequences whatsoever.
Well, friends, we're going to be taking your phone calls, and the lines have all lit up here instantaneously this afternoon as we pick up your phone calls. Write down our phone number, because as soon as you hear us hang up with one caller, that means that line will be open and you'll be able to get through. Write down the number at 800-733-9829. We're going to begin in Sparta, Wisconsin, and Dominic, you're on the air.
Yes, I hear everybody saying they let the protesters lock arm in arm, like you just said. Why aren't the churches out protesting arm in arm? Mm-hmm. Like they went on the beach in California this week for mm-hmm. church, 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. And why don't we go out and say what this doctor's saying, yeah, that we're being told lies? Instead of just sitting around complaining at home and on the radio, need to show up.
Well,
calling our congressmen and calling our government is falling on deaf ears.
Thank you, Dominic. And this is what churches are doing. For instance, we just saw Grace Community Church in Dr. John MacArthur saying, you know, enough of this. We're going to meet as a church. And it's interesting to see that response here, Doctor.
Well, I think Dominic is absolutely right. If people keep complying with this, I think the government's just pushing them to see how far they can go. It's like a little kid to see what he can get away with.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fine to besiege their phone lines to let them know what's going on. But if that's all you do, he said it's probably not going to do anything.
Thank you, Dominic, for the call. We're up against a break. We'll be back in 1 minute. And our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829.
Cemeteries and mausoleums are evidence of the sad reality of death, and that each of us has a divine appointment with death. According to surveys, Americans overwhelmingly believe that heaven exists and believe that most are going there. A small number believes that hell exists, with only 0.5% believing they will go there when they die. What if those who do not believe in hell die one day and find they made a tragic and eternal mistake? In the book, Hell is for Real, author Gary Fraser discusses the separation, the suffering, and the sorrow of hell, along with future events that will unfold. There is much information given by movies, television, psychics, and even by many religious circles. Gary presents scriptural truth on this important topic. VCY is making available the book, Hell is for Real, as our way of saying thank you for your support of $15 or more. Two copies for a donation of $25. Just ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
Dr. Jane Orient, our guest here today on Crosstalk, a medical doctor and executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Doctor, you've got lots of information that's available to our listeners here today. It's on your web. Tell us about it.
AAPSonline.org. That's for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. AAPSonline.org. You can find out about our lawsuit, about the FDA, to try to correct some things that keep Americans from getting access to hydroxychloroquine, plus all kinds of useful information about COVID-19.
What stage is your lawsuit in right now?
Well, we filed more information for an injunction to ask the judge to order the FDA to release the Strategic National Stockpile. They're hoarding millions of doses of hydroxychloroquine, and to retract the statements that state boards of pharmacy and medicine are using to threaten and intimidate physicians and pharmacists.
Well, again, folks, the website is AAPSonline.org. That stands for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org. Back to the phone lines. We've got Al calling next. Hi, Al, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just calling to say that I came across a Twitter post, but it was an article that Dr. Fauci wrote back in 2005 in the National Institute of Health's Virology. I don't know if it's a magazine or a publication, but he stated back then that hydroxychloroquine was an effective drug against coronaviruses, plural, back then. So I thought that was kind of eye-opening, you know, coming right from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. Thank you, Al. And Dr. Fauci's really gone back and forth on so many issues. No, masks aren't going to help. And now, yes, you need to wear masks. And not only that, but you need to have a pair of goggles, too.
Well, and he doesn't need it, though. He's allowed to chat with a friend at the baseball stands.
Right.
Without one.
So he was saying Dr. Fauci was touting hydroxychloroquine at one point.
Well, not exactly. I think that he was in that publication, and in the laboratory, this did show very promising effectiveness against coronaviruses.
Let's go next to Gary, who's calling next. Hi, Gary, you're on the air.
Yes. What is the proper way of calculating the death rate or survival rate? And where can you get honest answers as to the numbers, not only of those who tested new cases, but those who tested negative, which means they are not new cases, they were tested, but they came out negative?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that question. Where can we get unbiased data? So I don't know. I think the government's in charge of what data you're allowed to have.
Yeah. There are some, I know, different news agencies, for instance, in Wisconsin, there's like the MacIver Institute that gets numbers, puts them together, and certainly gives a different perspective than what we get from the nightly news in that regard.
Where are they showing the people who tested negative? They're only showing the new cases.
No.
The new cases were people who got tested positive. But what about those in today's group who tested negative?
Yeah, and doctor, at the same time, we've got groups that and hospital groups that are saying that they have a backlog of negative tests to get reported yet. So something's wrong there.
Well, yes, it certainly is. And another thing to watch out for is when they're talking about deaths, you want the day that the death occurred, not the day that it was reported, because there could be quite a long delay there.
Right.
And so the death rate could be going down as far as when it occurred, but you can't really see that because they're reporting deaths that occurred a week or two earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So will he find things at individual health departments? But even that's skewed as to sometimes, you know, what people are dying of or test, there's a void of information at this time?
Well, yeah, the altar of truth is the autopsy table, and we're not doing that very often.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Let's go to Renna from North Branch, Minnesota. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and I appreciate the program, and I think it's wonderful that this doctor is speaking out and telling us the truth, some of which I have been aware for some time. I think there's a lot of covert stuff going on, and the people need to wake up and learn from your program and spread the word, and our churches need to get involved because the American people are getting blindsided out of fear. So thank you for your program, and I recommend it to everyone I get in touch with. And God help us. And, you know, there's power in prayer, and we got to keep that ultimately in mind.
Thank you, Renna. We appreciate that. Doctor, how popular are the views you're espousing today with groups like the American Medical Association?
Well, I think they'd like to ignore them completely. If they can't shut you up, they would like nobody to listen.
Mm-hmm. How can physicians team up with your group?
They can go to aapsonline.org/join. Lay people can join also as associate members, and you can get our alerts and have free access to all of our information.
Gloria is calling from Martin City, Montana. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Gloria.
I'd like the doctor to clarify something for me. We have been told in the media that this COVID-19 is a virus with fungal protrusions on the outside. Now, in my mind, virus do not grow fungal protrusions. It would be a fungus spore that's growing fungal protrusions. And if it's a fungus, that tells me it's very easy to put under control, because sulfur kills fungus, and sulfur would be cabbage, onions, and garlic. And then the other side of the coin is, if it is a virus, the 1918 Spanish influenza was a virus, much worse than what we have. And there were many people who used vinegar and water, and it completely prevented them from being sick. I know, because I had friends that lived through it. And so I think it'd be nice if we knew what it really is, either fungal or viral, and if these simple cures still, we as the public, we need hope.
Tell you what, let's have the doctor respond to that. Thank you for the call here.
Well, I'm not sure what report she heard. I haven't heard anybody say that it's a fungus. It's got spike-like protrusions on it that you can see only under an electron microscope, so-called spike proteins that help it attach to cells. I mean, I have no idea about, there are all kinds of remedies proposed for the 1918 influenza, homeopathic remedies, and I just have no way of knowing whether any of them had any effect at all. Maybe just not taking too much aspirin was more helpful than anything. I just can't comment on most of what you
said. And Gloria, let me just ask you this. Was the fungus aspect, is that coming from news media or coming from a medical community?
It's all over the news media. It says it's a virus that has fungal protrusions, and I've never heard of a virus that grows fungus.
Yeah.
So to me, it must be a fungus, and if that's the case, it's easily treated. All I'm saying is we need hope as public. Mm-hmm. The public needs hope for simple cures. You know, all this seems to be so advanced and so complicated and so expensive and so frightening. I just think we need to have a little bit more information, really what it is, so we can kind of, you know, do a little research on our own, because we have the internet.
Yep.
We have.
Yep. Thank you, Gloria. Appreciate that. And doctor, I know this is something that you're focused on too, is hope, not hype.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of things that people could do, like making sure they have enough vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, and other vitamins that they can take. But information like that is being squelched from the internet too. Anything that disagrees with the World Health Organization may be taken down. So if you are given some really good advice, like make sure you got enough vitamin D, it may disappear.
Wow. Ralph is next in South Dakota. You're on the air, Ralph.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I didn't catch the first part of the program, but I don't know if your guest covered. I was wondering about wearing masks, because most states, I guess, have a mask mandate. And I guess here in South Dakota, we have not yet.
Right. Ralph, we did cover this earlier, but let me have the doctor just give a brief recap on the mask issue, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
I think outside a medical setting, there is really no evidence that masks are helpful. There is considerable evidence that they can do harm. You certainly should not wear one while you're driving or running.
And yet you see people in their vehicle by themselves wearing a mask.
Yeah, well, some of them crash their cars, too.
Jason in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air. Jason, please go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering, so coronavirus in general, that's a family of viruses, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
And that would include from the Spanish flu and N1H1 and some West Nile and a bunch of other things that happened in the last 20 years, let alone 100 years ago, correct?
No. Influenza viruses are a different family of viruses. About a third of the common colds are caused by a coronavirus, and the SARS epidemic and MERS epidemic were caused by coronaviruses.
Was the Spanish flu, I heard, was that a corona?
That's in the influenza family of viruses.
Okay. But either way, this has been going on for a while. It would seem that if it's a family of viruses, then couldn't there be one cure for all of them?
I don't know of any that would work for all of them. Probably for any respiratory virus, vitamin D is very, very important, and you can't really resist it if you don't have enough vitamin D. Vitamin C may be of benefit in all of them, and people have been cured from many viral diseases with high-dose intravenous vitamin C. But if you're in the hospital, you're probably not allowed to get any of it. There are things that viruses do have in common, but there are different families.
Thank you, Jason. Let's go to Brad in West Dallas. You're next. Go ahead.
Hey, Brother Jim. People have to realize that the mainstream media are using words designed to keep them people in the dark and not understanding what's really going on. They test people for antibodies, and they call them new cases and make it sound like new happenings where it's sick people. New cases equal sick people.
Right.
And that's false. New cases equal people with antibodies, which means they had the disease. Maybe they had symptoms, maybe they didn't, but it's over. And those antibodies are good. It'll prevent them from getting it again. And they need to stop listening to Fauci, otherwise known as Mr. Wrong. All this is a big scare machine.
Thank you, Brad. Doctor, your comment.
They have been conflating the types of tests. The antibody test means you've had it and you've developed immunity. What they're mostly reporting is these polymerase chain reactions, the PCR tests, that just say that there's something they got out of your nose that has some part of a fragment of a genome that it may share with the coronavirus. The inventor of the PCR said it was a manufacturing technique and should never be used for diagnosis anyway, but that's what they're using. So there's really a lot of dispute about what a PCR test really means. But anyway, if they add the two together, PCR plus antibodies, they're mixing up what might be a new case with what is an old case.
Doctor, it's been attested to me that a person who perhaps tested positive coronavirus and several days later when they get another test still prove positive, but they are counting that as a double case of coronavirus, meaning creating another positive rather than some people creating three positive tests.
Yes, that allegedly is occurring, and without access to the raw data, I mean, who knows?
Wow. Friends, we're just seconds from the break, so we'll take the break here and then come back to more of your phone calls. Our guest today, Dr. Jane Orient, the website is aapsonline.org. That's aapsonline.org. It's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. We'll take a quick 60-second break and back to more of your phone calls here for the final segment. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. In 1958, there was a very historic book written that all of you should read. You'll find it for free online. It's called Color, Communism, and Common Sense. It was written by Johnson Manning, someone I have written and spoken about for many years. He was at one time a very high-ranking official within the Communist Party of America. As a black American, he details how, beginning at least in 1934, Moscow began to try to take over the black churches of America and use them for agitation, for race war, division, and chaos. My friends, you can see what his warnings were all about and how many of the things he warned about, well, they're coming true in 2020. What's really startling is that the tactics that were used to take over the black churches in America by the communists have been largely used to take over the white Protestant denominations in America.
know, folks, the information is not popular, but the social medias of our time. Yes, doctors in Washington, D.C. silenced, and any doctor that offers hope, basically, and potential cures being shut down. And it's not right. And certainly these decisions should be between the patient and their doctor as it relates to their treatment. And so much dealing with hydroxychloroquine just totally being shut down at this time, as well as other means. Let's get back to the phone lines. Princeton, we have Yvonne calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, when I, with five children, and I took them to the doctor, and the doctor said, what's the problem? So I gave them the symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. Had a fever, or they were throwing up, or whatever. The doctor listened, and he never said, oh, I need to take a test. Oh, we'll take a test. Or my mother, we'll take a test. I think she's got pneumonia. Who invented this test? I mean, all at once, everybody's tested, and you have to get tested, or you should get tested. What? How did that come about?
Thank you, Yvonne.
Well, I think the art of clinical diagnosis is dying. That the, I mean, 95% of the diagnosis comes from the history. A lot of the rest comes from the physical. Laboratory tests used to be something to confirm or refute your suspicions, but now everything is just a shotgun test. And I think this is really a deterioration in medicine.
Hmm. David is next in Pewaukee. You're on the air. Hello, David. Okay, now let's go to Ron in Weyerhaeuser. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Jim. Thank you for taking my call again. I always listen, not to every program, but when they mentioned the fungus, I thought, bingo. I am convinced. I really believe it's a fungus because climate change, and I'm not saying man's caused climate change, don't get me wrong, but we are seeing more rain, especially in the Midwest. The lakes are rising, Great Lakes, we have more moisture.
Okay, let's just stay away from climate change, deal with, right with the content of our topic today.
Okay, but fungus loves moisture. That's what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. And I think that what the one lady said about vitamin D, I do agree with that, and I believe that you like vinegar and stuff like that. You use more vinegar in your food. That might be something that would help. But okay. I could be just talking in the wind. I don't know. But I mean, that's...
Thank you, Ron. Any studies to show moisture has any impact upon the coronavirus, doctor, that you're aware of?
Well, I tell you, it's very, very dry in Arizona right now, and we've got coronavirus. I think the virus survives better in dry air-conditioned air than it does in moist air.
Hmm. Very interesting. Thank you, Ron. Let's go to David next. You're on the air, David.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, doctor. There was this man who got at work, showed me a website that the COVID stood for Certificate of Vaccination ID, like the whole push is to push people to get vaccines, contain microchip and a sensor. And then second, like you said, so make a comment on that. And then second, is there an accurate diagnosis, a test to really of all the coronas to see that this is something that's separate from what's been out there?
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Well, I think that there are different types of coronaviruses, and they have a little different genome, and the testing is a very, very complicated, not very straightforward thing, so there are always going to be uncertainties.
There's talk about mandatory vaccinations.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is a very serious concern, and you have to wonder why the government is spending so many billions of dollars to make hundreds of millions of doses of a vaccine that has not been approved or fully tested yet, if they don't are really seriously intent on making sure everybody gets it.
Jack is next. You're on the air, Jack.
Hi, doctor. I got a question about cross-contamination. I'm in the food service industry, hospitality. We've taken simple courses to learn how to handle gloves, and I see these people that are cross-contaminating all the time. They're touching their mask. They're fudging with it. They're putting it in their pocket where their hanky is. I see construction workers hanging it on their rearview mirrors,
mm-hmm.
And I go, I know basic, you know, when I go to my dentist, I really appreciate what they do. They wash your hands in front of you. They put on a fresh pair of gloves. They put on a fresh mask.
Yeah.
What's going on here? This looks like those masks are doing no good whatsoever, even if that disease is out there.
Thank you, Jack. Doctor, your comment on the cross-contamination.
Oh, well, absolutely what he says is true, that medical workers are taught you take your mask off and dispose of it, don't touch it, you don't wear it between patients. Just wearing the same mask every day, putting it in your pocket and so on, is contaminating it. Yeah, it does more harm than good.
My. Thank you. John is next in Texas. You're on the air.
I wanted to ask the physician, just hypothetically, if you go into the hospital, you feel like you have the corona, you want to get tested, okay, so you got it, whatever, and you tell them what you want. I want intravenous vitamin C, like you had said earlier. I'd never heard of that. I say, I want hydroxychloroquine with the Z-Pak and all the other, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Can they override the patient's demand for what they want in their system, and then just the...
I tell you what, we've got 1 minute left in the program, so, Jen, let me have our guest comment on that question.
Absolutely, they can, and they will. In fact, what they'll probably do if you have coronavirus is tell you, get out of here, go home, isolate yourself, come back if you can't breathe.
Wow. But no patient can go in and say, hey, this is what I want for my treatment.
No.
Well, okay.
If you had a private doctor, you could do that. And then if you and the doctor didn't get along, you part ways and go see somebody else.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Doctor, I know that there are many people who long for accurate information on this, and you often are posting articles on your website addressing so many of these issues. And people can come up, just sign up on your website as well for releases. Is that correct?
They can do that. Also, we have a website, bit.ly/coronavirus articles. That has a lot of collections of things that we've put out.
Yeah, give us again that website, the Bitly site.
bit.ly/coronavirus articles.
Coronavirus articles. Very good. Well, friends, we thank you for joining us. And, Doctor, thank you for carving significant time out of your schedule for this. It's been very informative for our many listeners across the nation. And thank you for being vigilant on such important issues.
Thank you.
Dr. Jane Orient, our guest here today. Again, their website, aapsonline.org. Folks, you're better informed than when you started today, and we thank you for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.